Reading from Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Volume 1, Chapter 4, Text 67. Aho bhavan eva vishuddha bhaktimam param naseva sukato di manyaya imam prabhum bhacham udara sekaram jagara tad bhakta kanapramodinam. Indeed, your devotion for the Lord is absolutely pure, for you consider nothing more valuable than the pleasure of serving Him. You delighted all His devotees by speaking to that best of generous lords these words. Commentary: Sri Ramachandra is the most valuable Lord, ready to sacrifice everything for His devotees. The following verse, spoken by Hanuman, delights the Lord's devotees because it expresses the exclusive wish for the Lord's service and contempt for the impersonal Brahman. Actually, turn on my computer because, and you look at it, if, and put it to Outlook, because if anyone may send a message that my phone dropped or something. Okay? Yeah, just keep it on to that. All right? And if a message comes on, let me know. So if somehow the... No, see here. Yeah, you'll see it. It'll make a sound and it'll come up. Right? It's just some new thing. I mean, you don't have to watch it. You'll hear it. First of all, it'd be nice if someone just... maybe Ruthie or someone just send me a message that you can all hear me. Okay? And... if there's any problems, if the phone call drops, do the thing. So, Sri Ramachandra is the most charitable Lord, ready to sacrifice everything for His devotees. The following verse, spoken by Hanuman, delights the Lord's devotees because it expresses the exclusive wish for the Lord's service and contempt for impersonal liberation. Om Jnana Timarandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chaksur Unmutamyena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Vairagya Yugbhakti Risham Piyatnai Apaya Mamana Bipsamandam Kripamburiya Paradhuka Duki Sanatanastam Prabhumasriyami Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Shindu Vayevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo nama. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasade Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ramo Hare Ramo Rama Rama Hare Hare. So greetings from Sayreville, New Jersey, the village of the three great sages, Priya, Kishore, and Keshava. And I'm giving class in the Sri Sri Jagannath Baladev and Subhadra Mandir in Gop Kishore's house. And yesterday we did a very wonderful program at one of the Sangha members. Regular, you know, Govardhan from Edison, and this is Bharati at their house, and it was packed, and we were graced by Jayadvaita Marja's presence halfway into the program, and Samantha, she's also on the Sangha, she came and she brought her mother and her mother's eldest sister, one of her friends, and it was just a nice program. And we talked about Brihad Bhagavatamrita. I gave class on there, and I had spoken on it in the morning. I was in Hartford. We had another nice program, a very nice yoga studio, and it's just nice to see the varieties of people that can appreciate the teachings, Vedic teachings. And when I gave class in the morning in Hartford, and some devotees came, and one asked me, I was explaining how what's the history behind this book. The Brihad Bhagavatamrita is the essence of the Bhagavatam, because after Maharaj Prickett heard the Bhagavatam on the very last day, his mother came and wanted to hear a synopsis of it. So it's the essence of the Bhagavatam. And I explained that it's a very important lesson for communication, because communication entails taking something that you've heard and putting it in a form to a different form to accommodate the frame of reference of your audience. So what Maharaj Prickett had to do with the Bhagavatam and put it into a different form, but keep the same thing in a different form. Like, it's kind of like, I don't know, I'll give you an example. You know, you have pizza, and you make it round, you make it square. It's the same thing. It's got a different form. I don't know why I gave that analogy, but that's the analogy I gave. I probably could think of a better one if I had more time. But we do that all the time, or we should be able to do that. And if you fail to do that, you can't communicate. And it means you lack realization of what you're saying. Because when you have that realization, you actually not only understand truth, but you see truth. You can change its form to accommodate the audience. And that was Prabhupada's expertise. You know, although he was born in Bengal and lived his life speaking in the frame of reference of the particular culture, when he came to a new culture, he can change the form and keep the message intact. So now the question that was asked when I spoke that, well, how is it the same? You know, what is the same about it? Well, you know, if it's the round pizza and the square pizza, well, it's the same, because pizza means tomato sauce, cheese, oregano, and olives, and some dough. But because the program, you know, was for a health conscious audience, we made the dough out of spelt flour instead of whole wheat flour, bleached whole wheat flour. But what's the same? Well, that's the same. So what's the same, and what's the difference between the Bhagavatam and the Brihad Bhagavatamrita? Well, what's the difference is the story is different, the size of the book is different, the main protagonists are different in one sense, because the Bhagavatam is Sukadev and Maharaj Prickett. This is spoken by Maharaj Prickett to his mother. And within that story, Bhagavatam is suited to the sages of Naimisharanya. Within this story, it's Narada Muni and Gop Kumar. But what is the same? Anybody send a message? Yes, we've heard. No. Can people hear me?
Krishna. Oh.
Okay, you can. Okay, good.
Loud and clear, Marsh.
Okay, good. All right. Okay, thank you. I figured out how to do this now. Thank you. So, what's the saying? Well, if you look at the message, the Bhagavatam is about what? The Bhagavatam is about Krishna. So this is about Krishna. And the Bhagavatam is about realizing Krishna. And this is about realizing Krishna. And the method to realize Krishna is the same recommendation in both books, coming from different angles. The Bhagavatam's recommendation to understand Krishna is Nam Sankirtan, The Brihad Bhagavatamrita comes to the same conclusion. There's a question in the Bhagavatam, what is the duty of a man who is about to die? What should he not do? And the answer is, Harinamanu Kirtanam. The peerless method of success for all is kirtan. Same message comes in the story here. And the Bhagavatam is about devotion and how it manifests in perfection in terms of progressive levels of realization about God in different relations. And progressive means not that you can go from one to another, not that friend can become the mother, but it's progressive in the sense that the mother has just something more intimate than the friend. So the same progression, I'm not remembering it right now, but scholars of Bhagavatam will give you a level of pure devotion that's presented from the first canto to the seventh to the tenth, higher and higher stages of intimacy. Brihad Bhagavatamrita is the same. So that's there. And now we're in the search of Narada. Perhaps Sanatana Goswami, reading the stages of the Bhagavatam, thought that an engaging way to present that knowledge, of course, there's a presentation how this is a history, but either he writes it that way or he picks out this history which parallels it, that one is searching. And with that search, Narada encounters the same levels of devotion in the same order as the presented in the Bhagavatam, I believe. So now in that search, Narada has come up to Hanuman, and that's what we're discussing. And it's Prahlad who recommends Hanuman in his humility, and then he finally tells him to go there, and then we see Hanuman through the eyes of Narada, as we've seen all the other devotees through the eyes of Narada. And as I mentioned before, a common theme that we've been discussing is that the Supreme Lord has a pleasure potency. That means that which can attract the Supreme. It's so attractive, it can attract the Supreme Lord himself. And that's his own Ladini Shakti, his pleasure potency, which can attract him, which can control him, and which is called Krishna Prema. That same potency can be bestowed within the heart of a devotee, which is why it's rare. Because why will Krishna give something that can attract and control him? He'll only give something that can attract and control him to someone who's qualified for that. So it's sudulabha. That's one of the symptoms of love of Godhead at the level of bhava bhakti. It's sudulabha, very rare. He doesn't give it so easy. And because that can control him, if you want Krishna, you have to go to someone who has that potency in his heart. And that's the most confidential message that Krishna gave to Uddhava, that's the topmost secret. You can't get Krishna by any way but through the devotee who has that potency in his heart and who can give you that potency to chant the holy name. So we're following how this potency is manifest. Again, it's one thing, but it takes many shapes. And that's the beauty about love. And Krishna is Akila Rasamrita Murti. He's the full embodiment of appreciating different relationships. His pleasure is to enjoy love in so many different relationships, in so many different forms. So we are seeing these different forms of love and the varieties of actions and expressions in the manifestation of that love. And the other point I'm going to mention is, this is so important for our own practice in meditation, to focus on the devotees, because there is a transference, mystically and practically and psychologically, there is a transference from meditating, making the object of your worship another person. Immaterially, this is right, you worship a rock star, you will develop sex desire, mostly, if that's the message. You worship a punk band leader, you'll develop hate in your heart. Amazing that devotees still listen to these things anyway. But you know, there are some, there are some musicians. I don't want to offend all musicians that give a spiritual message. I'll leave that to you who they are. So it's a fact. And I was explaining to the devotees yesterday, understanding this, and even reading it in the Yoga Sutras, which describe the psychosomatic process of spirituality, basically, and realizing that this remembrance, this meditation, this association, creates the conduit for the other person's qualities. When I was driving, I'm doing this now when I chant. One of the most powerful ways to get me focused is just meditate on one devotee in the parampara, chant their pranam, chant the prayer to them, offer a garland, and it gives such potency and focus immediately to your meditation. Immediately. Vishuddha Chakravarti Thakur, his samadhi, in Radha Gokulananda, you can chant a verse of the Samsara Path immediately. And even God brothers chanting their pranam mantra, meditating on devotees that I know. It's very, very powerful. When I was riding here in the car, and it's quite boring driving for me. I know meditators that like to drive, they like to be alone and think. It's boring. So I started to go through the parampara. As soon as you meditate on a devotee in some way, there's something that comes. Something of their spirituality and focus comes. So it's great. So what is Hanuman doing? We can see Hanuman has spontaneous devotion and you see, we practice something in spontaneous devotion that we see in perfection, like ekadasi. The real practice of ekadasi is the perfected souls are so absorbed spontaneously in devotional service that they forget to eat. So we practice giving up material things. We practice reducing our material needs to focus more on Krishna. Or we chant Hare Krishna to get Krishna, but in the spiritual world, they chant Hare Krishna out of the joy of having Krishna. So sadhana and sadhya, the only difference between perfection and practice, difference between perfection and practice is that the consciousness of practice is the desire to attain the goal, and the consciousness of perfection is that you're chanting as a result of having the goal. You now have that love, and as a result of that love, you're chanting Hare Krishna. So we see what in perfection, but it's also the practice, what is Hanuman doing in spontaneous love? He's worshiping the deity in the forest with the understanding that there's no difference. Because the deity is the receptacle where God manifests in this world. The post office box is the receptacle where communication of mail manifest in this world. That post office box attracts a certain potency due to authorization. The deity form, Krishna appears in that form. It's the receptacle. Kevin, you're late.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. You're late. Okay. So he's worshiping that deity with full devotion. And of course, for the sadhakas, deity worship is such a powerful tool because we're immersed in material consciousness. And what is material consciousness? We look at the world as objects for our ego and our sensual pleasure. So what Tantra means, at least in Vaishnav Tantra, is you transform matter into spirit. And how do you do that? You start to look as the world, not as your object, but as God's object. For God's pleasure. Start looking at things that, no, this is not an object for my pleasure, this is an object for God's pleasure. And when you look at the world as an object for God's pleasure, then it changes the conception you have of yourself. Because then you look at yourself also as an object of God's pleasure. You look at yourself, let's put it in common terms, as a servant rather than a master. We look at the world as to be in our service. Psychologically, that's our how we look at things. We may switch it as a devotee. You know, okay, I look at it this way, but actually it's Krishna. So we have to really change the whole vision. And the way the vision has changed is you see objects in the world, and we're looking at our house. It's my kingdom. We're looking at the kitchen. It's for my enjoyment. We're looking at the flowers, it's, you know, for me. And then you shift it in deity worship, it's for God. It also shifts your conception of yourself. Now you're looking at yourself as servant of God. Because everything around you is His. That's why, you know, it's difficult to be the servant of someone. Because all of a sudden, you have to look at everything you have to look at everything in your environment as belonging to someone else, and that's a shift in consciousness, including yourself. That's a shift in consciousness. The deity worship is, so he's worshiping the deity, and he's listening to the glories of the deity. This is how you cultivate Raghunuga Bhakti. You listen to glories, and then you chant. And that's what he does. Then he chants prayers, some composed by others, some composed by him. And then the transference, seeing that level of ecstasy, he feels ecstasy. That mood comes to him, and Narada is in ecstasy. But as soon as he's glorified, he sobers up. He comes to the intellectual platform. That's not for me. And Narada then glorifies him in the final verses, the core of what is this Krishna prema in the heart of someone. And what the core is nothing becomes dear to you but service. And you're ready to sacrifice everything, and nothing becomes more pleasurable to you than service. I remember when Radhanath Swami, 10 years he wasn't in Vrindavan, which is a long time, because he, you know, he met the devotees in Vrindavan, even before he met the ISKCON devotees. And then I believe he arrived in Mathura by train, he walked along the bank of the Jamuna, and then he wound up in the Krishna Bhava Mandir, and I think the first person he met was me. Knowing what Vrindavan means, having so much experience and being with so many sadhus, first thing he did is he folded his hands and said, is there any service? Because he understood this is what the spiritual world means. Spiritual world means that everything is for Krishna's. Everything is for Krishna. And therefore, to be there, you have to be in the consciousness of his servant. It's not to come for your vacation and your pleasure. It's to come because this, we want to be in that place where everything is focused on God, where everything is seen as God, and where everything can be used for God's pleasure. We want to be in that world, and we're happy in that world. And when you were with Prabhupada, that was the intensity, because he was so much in the conception of being a servant of God that everything in his presence radiated spirituality, was transformed. It was Krishna. And it may have been things he used in Krishna's service, but there was an intensity about it. And you felt that intensity. Anyway, more about Hanuman here. He says, so Narada is still glorifying. He said, you're so pure, and you delighted the devotees by these words. So this is a famous verse. This is by Hanuman, which Rupa Goswami cites in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, 1249. And he cites it, Rupa Goswami, merely as Prasidam Sri Hanumat Vakyam. It's a well-known statement by Hanuman. So well-known that Rupa Goswami didn't even mention it. He just said it's a well-known statement. And it's Bhava Bhanda Chide Tasyai Sriyami Namuktaye Bhavan Pabur Ahamdasa Iti Yatra Lukyate. Even though liberation destroys the bondage of material existence, I have no desire for liberation in which I would forget that you are the master and I am your servant. So all he values is service. And if liberation means that I become God and I become free from material bondage and I become God, I don't want that. So he's famous for that. He doesn't want liberation. He doesn't want anything that can change the concept of that humble mood of service. And Vritrasura, I believe it's his prayers in the sixth canto. Vritrasura was a demon. But actually it was a devotee taking birth as a demon. And his prayers, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the highest prayers outside of the 10th canto. And he prays, Narayana Pras. I may get this wrong. I'll have to see if it's actually him that said it. I know it's in that canto. Narayana Prasarve Nakutas Chanya Bibhyati Swaga Pavarga Narakeshu Apituya Tidarshana. One who is Narayana, Parayana, who makes the Lord his life, just like here, Hanuman. No, nothing else was dear to him but that service. When the gopis were seeing Krishna in the hands of the Kaliya serpent, near dead, they said, Tapta Dukam Sunyam, our world is tormented, now the world is zero. Because you are our life. Without you, there's no life. That's what love means. And that's the consciousness that will satisfy the heart. And that's the consciousness of spiritual world. So, that's Hanuman. I don't want the life that where I'm no longer your servant. I want your service. And that's so, Vrachasra, Narayana, Nakuta, Swaga, Pavarga, Naraki. I don't care where I am. Swaga, heavenly planets, Pavarga, this earthly planets, Nark, hell. I don't care where I am. I just want your service. Now, Parikit because this is being spoken to his mother. So sometimes Narada is speaking. Now this is going to the original level. So the original level is Prickett speaking. So he says, Hanuman was now burning in a fire of separation from his master, the Supreme Lord. Beautiful analogy. And the fuel of hearing about the special mercy of the Lord's lotus feet had brought that fire to blaze. For a while he cried sorrowfully, and then calmed by the sage, he spoke. So Hanuman, he stayed to represent Hanuman. And Hanuman went back to the Uprakat Ayodhya, the unmanifest Ayodhya. And he stayed here on the material plane in Kimpurusha Loka, Samparsha, this is Bhartparsha, there's another planetary system, whatever it is. He stays. And attachment manifest in separation in the absence of your love. Absence makes the heart grow fonder. So it manifests in separation. And because we are not with God, that is a very apropos consciousness for us to cultivate. The mood of separation in our chanting has to be based on attachment. But if we have attachment, we will feel separated. So what to speak of Hanuman is separating, and it's like a fire. And what's the fuel? Hearing about the special mercy brings it to a blaze. And therefore, the manifestation of separation, when it comes to a reasonable degree, then tears come from the eyes. And for the sadhaka, those tears are his wealth. Those tears are his wealth. Commentary. As dry firewood kindles quickly, Hanuman's ecstatic pangs of separation at once increased when he heard the Lord's special glories, especially the accounts of how the Lord had mercifully engaged him in personal service. So, you know, one of the glorifications that Narada mentioned is that how can you say you're not a devotee? You were engaged in personal service for so many years. So he begins to cry. Narada was able to soothe him, was able to console him with soothing words. And after crying for some time, Hanuman regained his composure. So he cried sorrowfully, and then calmed by the sage. So the sage calmed him. Because he couldn't speak. He was choked up. We may have all had that experience. You're choked up. You can't speak. Like Kadamba Mala at my Vyas Puja. I don't know if she's here, but she gets a plug there. So, crying for some time, and Hanuman regained his composure. So this is what Hanuman said. Sri Hanuman said, O best of sages, why are you doing this to such a wretch? The void of the lotus feet of Sriman Ramachandra, why do you make me cry by reminding me of how the Lord has neglected me? This is reminding him that the Lord was with you, which means that the Lord is not now with you. So this is a very high ecstatic feeling here, right? He's criticizing. He's criticizing. Why has he left me? Out of love. He's left me. Because the attachment's so strong. The attachment of love is so strong that you want to be with the object of your love. Now the object of your love leaves, and it's cruel. It's hard-hearted. But the saying that it's cruel, it's hard-hearted, is an expression of just how much you love them. Why? The love is so strong. Why have they done this? Because Lord Ramachandra appeared like a human being with two hands and two legs. We would expect, this is interesting commentary, We'd expect his lotus feet to be described by the dual form, Padambhujabhyam. So in Sanskrit, there's not just singular and plural. There's singular, dual, and plural. So you'd expect when you describe lotus feet, you describe it as dual, instead of by the plural, Padambhujai. So here, the word is Ramachandra Padambhujai, the plural lotus feet of Ramachandra. Well, what is that about? Well, he's a human being and he has 2 feet. So in Sanskrit, plural forms are normally used to indicate more than 2. But Hanuman here employs poetic license by using the plural form out of extreme reverence for the Lord. So sometimes grammatical mistakes are okay if they're used in ecstasy, or, for example, sutta, sutta, mahabhago. You show that to Jayadvaita Maharaj, generally he'll cross out one of the suttas. The joy of less words for an editor. There's a whole thing someone wrote about an editor's ecstasy is getting rid of a word. When you write, it's a real joy if you can get rid of a word. You can make it smaller, more compact, easier to understand. So, sutta, sutta, mahabhago, when he heard, Sutta Goswami heard, when Shonakarishi heard that Sutta would speak the Bhagavatam, which he realized, he became so excited that he said it twice. And then it's not a mistake, because it shows extreme enthusiasm. So out of extreme reverence. Of course, Gail is going to ask the question, well, what's so reverent about saying that someone has 3 feet or many feet? But anyway.
Maharaj, you're a mind reader. Wow.
What?
You're a mind reader.
Gail, mute the phone, or I'll have to put it on the on-mute phone.
Okay.
What? I'm so used. I also have a subtle brain, Gail. So when I say something where there's a little hair, millimeter trip of logic, skip of logic, I automatically know how your mind will work. Okay? Okay. The word hinam means not only devoid, but intentionally rejected. So he says, why have you, not only devoid of, why are you doing this to me? Why have you neglected, but it means intentionally rejected. In the complex transformations of ecstasy, Hanuman lovingly reproaches Lord Ramachandra for being cruel. Technically, naishturyam means hardness of the heart. Hardness of the heart. So, so there's some poetic license for ecstasy. Your lotus feet. Just somehow poetic license. It's just mentioned in the plural, poetic license. The love is so great that when someone leaves you, it just, you feel, why? It's done this. But it's still a manifestation of ecstasy. If I'm really the Lord's servant, then why did he forcibly abandon me when he took with him to his spiritual kingdom his dear devotees, including Sugriva and all the residents of Kosala? So if you understand Rasa's theory, the Rasa, or your love for Krishna in your particular relationship, is considered like an ocean. And the waves are the emotional experiences that churn it. It's the same thing. Another good example. The ocean is one thing, but it has different forms. You have a big wave, a small wave. But it's still the same thing. It's the same thing. The love has many emotions, but they're expressions of love. And one is even a kind of anger in love. why have you, Jesus Christ, right? Same thing, isn't it? O Lord, why hast thou forsaken me? You know, it's different expressions. And it's a highly emotional state, and it's the most intense emotional state. So it's transforming in many ways out of love. It's still the shape of love, but it comes out in just many ways. Why have you forsaken me? You're cruel. You've left me. But it's a manifestation. You are very kind to me because I've had the good fortune to engage in his service. You conclude that the Lord has given me his favor. So, the same point is given here, again. And what is that point here? That the advanced devotee is so much happy and satisfied in the humble position of being a servant, in which that mood of service creates the nature of the mind that is able to maximize the feelings of love and mercy that one is receiving from that object of love, from your person, object that you love. And you're so satisfied in that, and you're basking in that, that you resist anything that shifts you again into the center of service. And when, you know, when someone says jai, 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 all glories to you, all glories to you. You're so great, you're so great, you're so great. If one takes that in the wrong way, that person is put into the misconception that I am the object of worship rather than God. That's why Prabhupada said, we said that yesterday, Bhakti Sanat, one who thinks he's guru is garau. I can't pronounce it, but is a cow. If you think you don't have that conception. Who is guru? One who is servant of his guru. Is the guru looking up or is he looking down? Is he looking up to the service of the lotus feet of his own guru, or is he looking down to the people that are worshiping and respecting him? So anything that's shifting one in consciousness to egoism or potentially does that, one militantly rejects on the spiritual platform, spontaneously rejects. It's just like you give someone a food that they don't like, a young child, and they go, ugh, immediately, distaste is there. I don't like it. See, when I grew up, the vegetables they would give. I don't know why they didn't cook fresh vegetables when I grew up. It was like canned vegetables in the salty water, and you know, I hated vegetables. It's amazing I became a vegetarian. I would try to hide them and, you know, not eat them, you know, anything I could do. I don't know why all young devotee kids, when they come, they just want puris and rice. I can't see it. Western kids, puris and rice. So, they don't like it. So he doesn't like this. He doesn't want to be put in the that type of consciousness. So he's rejecting out of humility. Okay, we said something. Are there any questions? And it was delightful today because I figured out finally how to mute the phones, and then not have, when I unmute the phones, have me myself unmute everybody's phone simultaneously. So it's an accomplishment after 3.5 years and my technical ability. Okay, any questions?
Mark?
Yeah, Mooney?
Please accept my humble obeisance.
I will.
Can you hear me okay?
I can, yeah.
I had a question, but first a quick comment about the Sanskrit plural. I don't know if it would help.
Yeah, please help me.
But often, like, in older usages of language, sometimes you could express humility by changing the number. So, sometimes even nowadays we have the so-called editorial we, where you're just speaking for yourself, but you say, we're simply trying to, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So often in Sanskrit, using the plural for a single person is a sign of respect or deference. So commonly, if a junior is speaking to a senior, they might use the word bhavantaha, which means you all, when in fact, you know, they could have, you know, that's more reverential than just using the singular form. Anyway, I don't know.
I think that answer may have satisfied Gail's logical inquiry. I think it's a good answer. That's the way there's a history of how respect is shown in that culture. So okay,
so
good. What else?
Question. So my question is about you spent some time earlier in the beginning of class talking about the relationship between realization and giving a certain kind of message.
Giving a certain kind of what?
Message. Like
message.
Realization allows you to communicate.
Realization allows you to communicate, yeah.
And I guess there's two factors of my question. I'll give them both to you, but if you just want to answer the first.
Yeah,
you know,
all right. Okay.
One is, do you think that, are there any things you can identify from the time between Srila Prabhupada's teaching and our current time that you think particularly should be adjusted? Maybe ways that he said certain things or did certain things that you think are not as apt nowadays. And secondly, my impression is that you actually started to hint at this, which I appreciated. My impression is that the Brihad Bhagavatamrita was Sanatana Goswami's way of communicating truths that Lord Chaitanya gave him.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, is it pariksha?
That who gave him? What?
Lord Chaitanya gave Sanatana Goswami certain teachings. And he's now explaining those teachings to us.
All right.
I don't know, maybe it's different, but I'm wondering how Parikshit Maharaj's own realization ties into this, because you mentioned this was his insight.
Yeah.
Anyway, those were the two questions.
Okay, well, the first one is, just off the bat, thinking of one, right? I would say the Sunday feast. I say the Sunday feast this may be controversial, but I think it was started in New York, you know, basically people were hippies. It was a good time. Now I think there's a congregational movement and you know, people work and they have families. I think that Sunday's a terrible time. If I was in a temple, I wouldn't have a Sunday feast, because it's, you know, to have the whole Hare Krishna movement eating a huge, heavy feast at 8 o'clock and starting off Monday morning in the mode of ignorance. I wouldn't have it. I think it's people with children, they have to put them to sleep to school. I wouldn't have a Sunday feast. I'd have a church program. somehow or other, if they want to have... that's just one thing. I mean, other things, I'd have to think a little bit more deeply. Because it's such a sensitive issue. You know, you want me to think quickly and say, this is what Prabhupada did, this is how I would change it. I'd have to think very, very deeply about it, because it may come off as offensive, honestly. You know what I'm saying? So if I thought more deeply, I probably could say, even Prabhupada. Prabhupada stopped the Harinam in India, because people identify Harinam with beggars. So he stopped the public Harinam for a while, I believe. I remember that in one sense, because people looked at it as a different way. So, all I could say is, we do have the license to kind of change the presentation, etc. And as you know, there's the modernity, post-modernity, there's ways that people look at things. You know, I don't know. I think people sometimes do things and change things out of a lack of realization that Prabhupada already realized. I don't remember Prabhupada trying to build so many temples in the cities. I can understand, you know, he had New Vrindavan, which wasn't just a temple. It was a whole rural environment where the temple had context. I personally feel that, you know, everyone wants to build a temple. I feel it's kind of an advertisement to actually prevent certain people from coming to our temple, because we're advertising that we're Indian. And then they want to make it ornate and spend, and this is my own opinion, ornate and spend so much money. For what? And then you have the neighbors complain, you know, because they don't want an Indian temple. I would just have a functional building like these, you know, and within the building have a big, beautiful temple, a space, a functional space. I went, when I lectured in, there were reasons to have a temple. I'm not saying every place. I'm not saying every place. Some places a temple may be fine, and especially if you want to have something if your main outreach is Indians. I think it's fine. But I saw one thing. You know, I was in East Hartford, and they arranged a program for me. And I went, the temple was in East Hartford. So when the person said, they arranged it for the person I know, I thought it'd be in East Hartford, which is not a good neighborhood. So I had a vision of where this program was going to be, you know. But then he said, no, it's in Gloucester, some kind of suburb, about 20 minutes. That was the most. And it was great. You know, you walk in there, kind of like what a doctor's office would be like, kind of, you know, but a really nice one. You know, you have like a center desk, and there's like, not a doctor, there's like five or six little rooms, you know, and they gave us one of the rooms. And I just thought, if I had money and you want to build a center, do something like that. We have a seminar hall and different rooms, you know what I'm saying, which can be used, and then have a temple next door, a functional building. But you don't have to advertise that this is for Hindu religion. You advertise that this is for spirituality. But I'm just saying, I appreciate your question. I prefer to think about that, because you're saying what things Prabhupada did that I feel would be like, you know, kind of like a leeway to change. That's a very, very sensitive topic. But I offhand, I just thought of one. I would, if I had a place, I'd move the Sunday feast to Sunday morning. I would do just like the rest of America does. You know, and because that's the easiest time for people to come. The time is more in the mode of goodness. And then when they get their spirituality, you can enjoy it the rest of the day. You know, so it sets the rest of the day. And if people want to stay more for spirituality, they can stay more. When you have it at night, and it's 9 o'clock, and then you eat the feast at 8, and then you want to, it's just, I don't understand it now. And I'm not even sure when Prabhupada had the Sunday feast. I'm not sure if it was that late either in 22nd Avenue. These are pet peeves of mine. Just can't understand it. I think, why not change it? Have a Sunday feast, 11 o'clock, like everybody else in America that goes to church. And you don't even need to have a Sunday feast. You can have a brunch. You know? Because before, it was to attract the hippies. So let's cook all this big, big feast. But now, it's just for our congregation. And a lot of them are Indians and can cook better than the Sunday feast anyway at home. So what's the necessity? And therefore, they don't cook Sunday feast like we cook them before anyway. When they used to have Sunday feast, and Prabhupada used to make those samosas and the chutneys and the, you know, then boy, that was really something that you know, give your life to come for. You know? So I would definitely think, why a Sunday feast? Mooney, yeah, anything you had in the mind that could change?
No, I don't know. I mean, sometimes I think, I really appreciate that you pointed out that there are certain things that we think Prabhupada did that maybe he didn't do, or at least maybe he was ambivalent about it. And I think a really interesting study would be to see what things are normative or standard in our in ISKCON, and see what things actually came from Prabhupada and what things came from individual disciples' initiative. That to me is interesting too.
Well, I'll give you one that's kind of interesting, right? This is really funny, right? You know, they have a picture of Prabhupada in L.A. with Gurukul kids. There's actually a picture, and they did a painting of it, and they had yellow dhotis, right?
Yeah.
Now, Gurukul didn't have yellow dhotis when Prabhupada was there. You want to know how yellow dhotis came? This is funny, but, you know, when the Gurukul started, they used to put the kids in saffron. Right? But then when you got to India, right, it was ludicrous to have, you know, 7-year-old kids in saffron. Because saffron means like renunciates or monks, right?
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
So then when we got to India, you know, we figured out, well, we can't have them in saffron. And actually, the color saffron itself, the color saffron itself, is not even a brahmachari color in Vedic times. The brahmacharis would wear white. Those who took sannyas would take saffron. But the Ramakrishna mission, in their preaching, gave the brahmachari sannyas, gave the brahmachari saffron. So Prabhupada, in his preaching, I think, because he knew he was competing with the Ramakrishna mission, he had the brahmacharis also wear saffron. But those who wear saffron, they don't change. So then we put the children in white. When we put the children in white in India, it's so you couldn't keep the clothes soaked. They had to wash their own clothes. So one day I got together with the people and we thought that one other brahmachari color is saffron, right? Is yellow. And then everyone thought that Prabhupada made yellow clothes. You know, it could have carried as a tradition. So those are kind of, that's a small thing. But it's small, but it's telling, right?
Yeah.
And then even in a picture of Prabhupada that someone painted with kids, they would have the dhotis yellow. So then it becomes carried on. So this is just an example of how things like that go. But what I would say, and I always believe, that there has to be a stronger theological side to the ISKCON, the Hare Krishna movement. And what I'd like to see is, you know, this could be a paper. You know, just an idea. You know, imagine a study. Imagine the concept of what's communication, how Prabhupada changed things, what are details, what are principles, how the movement continued, what things won't they change that could be changed, you know, what things Prabhupada did that can't, you know. It's, you know, one time Bhurijan Prabhu asked Prabhupada, you know, he said, you know, how do we know what things we should change and not change for the sake of preaching or something? And Prabhupada looked at him and gave a very simple answer. He said, it takes intelligence. So intelligence has to guide, and I think, you know, we have to see what things, are presentable. I would say one thing is where I'm serious about this. When Prabhupada, you know, when we promoted at least externally the Indian culture so powerfully, the Indian culture in America was associated with mysticism. You know, and now, you know, well, India also is related as mysticism, but India, it's a little bit shaded with kind of 7-Eleven and these kind of things also. So it's not, you know, it's not the forceful effect that you have an Indian-based thing so much, you know, as much as, although the spiritual, I'm also not on the other side, you know, hiding Vedic culture, because I think Westerners are very attracted to Vedic culture. You know, I the robes for monks I think are great.
You know,
what the, you know, yoga. yoga and, you know, all these things. So India still has some type of mystical sense, but maybe a balancing of it.
Okay, well, thanks, Marj. I mean,
okay, it's a lot for thought, but I think that this should really be thought of carefully. And I think that kind of thoughtfulness will make the vibe, and, you know, means, you know, keeping, you know, I think that, you know, keeping what should be kept, you know, like you don't get rid of book distribution, but, you know, find out a better way to do it. Vaisheshika Prabhu is, you know, the minister of book distribution. He's a very progressive person, and he knows that Prabhupada stressed it. And he has faith in it that it's the best way to spread Prabhupada's message, right? But he thought a very wonderful way to do it, where he engages everyone. He makes beautiful displays in different places. They get legal permission. And then they have nice bhajans and kirtans. And then they have a way where people could come and voluntarily give the money. So they come, you know, they hear the kirtan, they come to a book display, right? It's a very nice book display, a very colorful books. And then there's a way where people can give the money. So, you know, he kept the principle. And his center is very, very successful. He's actually planning, this is serious, it's Silicon Valley. He's planning to have out 100 Sankirtan parties. He's already ordered 100 Madangas and 25 harmoniums. You know, and that way, he figured out book distribution, everyone can be engaged. Because someone may not be the person that goes out on the street and approaches someone cold. You know, but then he makes an attractive display, he has people, and then there's some people that may be around the thing that are trained to. So I'm just saying, it's not that you throw out the core traditional which Prabhupada had. There's reasons for it. But an intelligent person knows what to keep and how to remarket it. Okay. Thank you, Mahmoudi.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
One more question, and then I'd like to say hello to various friends and well-wishers. Anybody else have another question?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
I should have just said, Gail, if you had any questions. Why not be just straight and direct? Okay, Gail.
Well, first of all, I want to say that 2 days in a row you gave me super soul experiences, because at the program yesterday, so badly wanted Amritananda to lead the kirtan and only. And even though
what's
he was
that?
I said yesterday,
yeah.
I so badly wanted Amritananda Prabhu.
Yeah.
To lead the kirtan.
Yeah.
And then you asked him to do it as if you read my mind, you know? It was amazing.
Right.
You know? As if you didn't get to do it so long, but
Yeah.
I love his kirtan thing, you know.
Yeah.
Really, so good.
He's got janma and karma. He's the son of one of the greatest.
Yeah, Kirtaniyas.
Oh, my God. I mean, his father was amazing. And he's got good heart, too.
Mm-hmm.
The combination is great. Yeah, okay.
And the second one was that, you know, if you had asked the questions yesterday, I would have asked the very question that you started out answering this today's Sangha with. Which was the question that you put to us in the first place yesterday. You know, that was amazing. I mean, you can ask Amiya Nimai. I told her the question that I wanted to ask yesterday.
Yeah.
And that was the question. How is the Bhagavatamrita the essence of the Bhagavatam? You know, how are they similar? And now, correct me if I'm wrong, but...
One second. Okay. These are just three questions if you want to help them there. Or you want to meditate and worship, it's okay too, but you don't have to say. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, the way I understood it is that the message of both of them is that we are to chant and hear about Krishna so that we can come to ultimately experience our original relationship with him.
Right.
And that's how the Bhagavatamrita is the essence of the Bhagavatam.
Right, and it gets even a little bit more commonality with the description of devotees in different levels and the, you know, yeah. Yeah. Because even that, you know, saying, you know, recommending kirtan, but the levels of devotees, yeah, okay, good. Same thing, yeah.
And thank you, Mahamuni, by the way, for his answer.
Yeah, I really needed help with that many feet Sanskrit. No, I know when I read something, because that wasn't me, when I read something where it's not absolutely logically explained, and I know exactly where your mind goes.
Actually, so you gave me actually three supersutras, because I couldn't believe that that was the exact question, in my mind, and then you said that, you know, so
yeah.
I actually got three super soul experiences in a row within less than 24 hours.
I even got it down to the number of feet you were going to ask about.
Exactly. You know, it was amazing.
Okay.
It was so amazing.
Okay, good. Okay. Okay. This is a private joke, but Gail, just tell Joe, right? I don't get no respect. Okay. Okay. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Maurice.
Okay. That private joke is Gail, husband, and myself, we have something in common. Besides our affection for Gail, is we were big fans of Rodney Dangerfield. But anyway, anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hare Bo. Who's this?
Rasikya. This is Rasikya.
Rasikya, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, my obeisances.
Yeah, nice.
I found that particularly good class today, and I think that point that Mahamuni brought up is really, really significant, and would like to hear some more thoughts if you consider it deeply.
I could. Can you think of anything?
No, I mean, the one that you brought up was one that I had, too, and I moved the feast up a little bit, but actually I think I agree with it being in the morning. I mean, that's just a little example.
Yeah, well,
but
you know,
there's so many things that I'd also have to think about it before I can even come up with.
Yeah, because it deals with Prabhupada, you don't want to make a mistake.
Right,
know?
Exactly.
You know, so Prabhupada should have changed this, you know, when it's not something he's... Yeah, and I'm not, you know, a little earlier is better. But it's different, too. You know, sometimes, like in New York, people have to drive to the Brooklyn Temple, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and it's like,
yeah.
And, you know, the neighborhood and then the parking, and, you know.
Yeah,
it may be different if you drive down the block. Okay, that's okay, 6 o'clock at night. But eating so late, you know, I know people who are from coming to Krishna consciousness from a yoga background that became disturbed. Because they know about the modes of nature, and if you eat at night so much, it creates the mode of ignorance. So they're trying to figure out, how is this a society that promotes yoga?
Yeah, really.
You know, and I believe, do you know when Prabhupada had his Sunday feast?
You know, I don't remember, but I think it was a little earlier. I think it used to start like at 4:30 or something.
Okay.
In
yeah.
the afternoon. And I mean, what I do is I start mine at 5:30, and we take prasadam and talk and mill at first, and then we have the talk in the kirtan.
Right, and that's also,
it's sort of dinner time,
That's also it wouldn't be bad taking so late, but you're not taking your home, then you got to drive back to someplace, too,
exactly.
You know? And then it's a feast, it's not just like dinner, and it's not like, you know, it's okay in a country where you go to bed at midnight, you know? But devotees are supposed to get up early, and I don't know, you know, and then you have, if you're supposed to have, at the same time, you're supposed to have a morning sadhana and wake up early, and then you, I remember when I first came to the temple, I first stayed in the temple,
mm-hmm.
I would eat so much sweet rice,
mm-hmm.
that in the morning my eyes were pasted together when I woke up. So I'm just trying to figure out, how is that yoga, right? I join them. I'll tell you a very funny story, too, about the devotees' eating habits. When I was preaching, when Mahamuni was preaching in Rutgers and making, so this one person joins. It's a very, very, like, dynamic person. Kind of tall and good-looking, very, and he was Oriental. He was Korean. You know, he's like a Dalai Lama type. Cottons. And he was like a Zen Buddhist, and he would, like, his mind was very controlled, and when he would move, because he would practice these Zen meditations for 10 hours with those masters, when his mind would move, it was very much in the mode, his head would move to the side. So he decided to travel for me for a while, and we wound up in the Boston Temple, and it was the Sankirtan Marathon Feast, right? And this, you know, the Sankirtan Marathon Feast, right?
Uh-huh.
Somehow it was cooked by this Italian devotee, Priya Darshan. And I could have called it, you know, the White Christmas Feast, you know? Because there was so much cheese in it. It was like sweet rice and cream sabji and, like, you know, rasgullas. And then, you know, so it's this huge feast, the Sankirtan Feast, right?
Uh-huh.
So I take and I go up to my room, and he knocks on the door, and the conversation went like this. I said, "Who is it?" It said, "James." He said, "Can I come in?" And he spoke very like soft. I said, "Yes." He said, "I have one question to ask you." I said, "Yes." He said, "I am very confused. I do not know what my revered mother would think of me coming to such an ashram. I have a doubt, and I don't know what my mother will think of me coming to such." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "I went downstairs, and after the feast, there was a sweet eating contest. It was a glub chub eating contest in front of the form of your divine master, right? I don't know what my mother would think of such gluttony, and I don't know." And then he said, you know, and then he said, "I don't know, you know, I'm puzzled." He said, "But then worse than that," he said, "the person who won the contest, you know, he ate 52 sweets. I don't know what my respected mother would think of me being in such an ashram." And he said, "Then worse than that, the winner of the contest, and he vomited in front of the divine master." He says, "I am very puzzled. I don't know what to think. You know, it is such an amazing thing. It is so puzzling." He said, "But," he said, "I got a realization from that." I said, "James, what is the realization?" He said, "That there is no material qualification for entering Krishna consciousness." Then I said, "James, more," and I repeated his voice, I said, "James, more amazing that someone ate 35 glub jubbins and vomited in front of my divine master is that you got a realization from that." Okay, anyway, anybody else like to say Hare Krishna? I'm in a very joking, humorous mood. Anybody else?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Carl and Stella, Hare Krishna. Great. I'm very happy to receive your letter this morning, and I will forward it to the or parts of it. Thank you. Nice to hear from you. Thank you.
Wonderful class.
Yeah. If anybody can think of any of those realizations, it's a nice topic that Mahamuni brought up. Very relevant and good for the thought, you know, to broaden our perspectives and help us to understand things more deeply. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. This is Kadamba Mala.
Kadamba Mala, did you see I gave you a plug?
I did, Guru Maharaj. I thought I had to say hello today.
Thank you.
I'm sorry I missed the program yesterday.
Oh, no, it's okay. Don't worry about it. You had to do something with your daughter. But Kadamba, that's super soul. I knew you were on.
I knew you were on. And you're not on all the time.
So. No, I'm usually here. I just don't say hello.
Okay, great, great. Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's nice to hear from you, Kadamba. Good. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna? Okay. I go to India on Tuesday till the 16th with a yoga tour. I'm very excited about that. I'm preparing the seminars that I'll be giving, and I'm developing something really interesting on yoga psychology, and then I'm going to have yoga psychology and vows, psychologically how vows work, yoga psychology and forgiveness. And it's going to be interesting. And then and finally then with yoga psychology and bhakti. So it's very interesting. Okay, thank you all. And I'm pretty sure this Wednesday, which will be Thursday. Yeah, I'll arrive in Delhi on Wednesday night. Thursday morning at 7:30, it'll be 9 o'clock. So I will give the Yoga Sutra class. And the next week, I'm not sure where I'll be, but if there's any conflict, then I'll let you know. And then Mahamuni can explain the Sadarshan, the six philosophies, and what are the differences if I ever can't come. Okay, thank you all. Hare Krishna.